Welcome. This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Bastorf-Hager.
A warm welcome to my special guest today on the Care in Action podcast of Care Austria. It is Ambassador Dr. Friedrich Stift, the Managing Director of the Austrian Development Agency. Welcome to Care Austria, Dr. Stift.
Thank you very much for the kind invitation.
I am very pleased that you have taken the time to speak with us today. And as usual on the Care in Action podcast, I will introduce our guest very briefly. Ambassador Dr. Friedrich Stift is a diplomat who has previously served as Austrian ambassador to Saudi Arabia and Iran, and most recently to China. Since 2021, he has been the managing director of the Austrian Development Agency, ADA in short. With its approximately 350 employees at home and abroad, is the operational unit of Austrian Development Cooperation. It is currently responsible for the implementation of 560 bilateral programs and projects with a total financial volume of more than 550 million euros. Once again, a warm welcome. Care Austria and ADA have been working together well for many years, and in the following conversation, we will also talk a little bit about this good cooperation. Now, you have a very interesting CV and you took on a huge responsibility in the summer of the previous year. A year that was not easy for any of us. And I would imagine that taking on a new major role like this in one of the most critical years of crisis that we have experienced firsthand in our lifetime was an even greater challenge. How did you feel about it, or how do you feel about it now?
Well, I'm actually doing quite well. But you're quite right, the last 1.5 years have been challenging years, no matter where in the world you were experiencing them. It was challenging in China, it's challenging at ADA. But I think we've been able to implement our projects well, despite the difficult circumstances and conditions. The work hasn't rested. We have postponed some projects, but actually very few. We have reallocated some money towards humanitarian aid, but overall we have managed to implement our programme.
The same holds true for care. We have also reallocated quite a bit. We have mainly reallocated private donations because, of course, the need for COVID programmes has exploded in the last 1.5 years. You mentioned it yourself. The need for humanitarian aid, and Austria has also done something there, has actually increased dramatically. Does that worry you when you look at the current situation?
Yes, to some extent it does, because on the one hand we have a pandemic, and it's the first time that we have been confronted with a worldwide pandemic in the last 100 years, apart from the Spanish flu after the First World War. On the other hand, climate change is giving us a hard time, with increasing periods of drought where crops fail. 2 years ago and last year, there were swarms of locusts in Africa and Central Asia that devoured entire regions. At the same time, we have typhoons, floods, so it all goes hand in hand. This is causing a great exodus from the countryside. People can no longer sustain themselves with agriculture, where they used to be self-sufficient, and consequently go to the cities. And of course, we see this in Europe, with increasing migration.
And a concern, you also know it for sure. But I have been working in this field for 30 years now, and I have been increasingly worried in the last 2 years. Are we doing enough? Can we do more? And I have often been asked too, is there any point at all, because it is also over dramatic already? Is there anything more we can do? What would be your answer to that?
Of course, everything we do is really a drop in the ocean. I mean, as Austria, we do put considerable resources into development work. We have about 125 million euro a year. That's not nothing. That's quite a considerable amount. But of course, when you look at the major crises in Africa, Latin America, and some Asian countries, it's not enough. But thank God, because you mentioned it earlier, humanitarian aid has increased. We have more funds at our disposal, from the Relief Fund for Disasters Abroad. With the new government, made up of the Conservative and the Green Party, the resources of the Relief Fund for Disasters Abroad have been considerably increased, from 12 or 15 million to 55 million this year and 60 million next year. So we have more money at our disposal for immediate crises and can help selectively, but in a targeted way.
And this is also the response of official Austria to the increased need for humanitarian aid. To perhaps also mention a figure, the number of people in need of humanitarian aid has risen every year, and we are now at 275 million people who need humanitarian aid. That is, they need this help to ensure their survival, not to comfortably receive support from somewhere, but to ensure their very survival. And I'm very happy that Official Austria has also said that we will do more. It will never be enough though, will it?
It will never be enough. But it's important to set an example and to show solidarity with people who are less fortunate, especially those who are affected by disasters. It can also happen to us. We were also happy after the Second World War when we received Marshall Plan aid, or food supplies, from Switzerland, Sweden and other countries. So we don't leave them alone in the crisis.
And the need for the care packages.
Equally, the care packages were very important after the Second World War.
And not just altruistic either.
No, and they still play a role. And many people still remember the care packages, which were very important, because people suffered from hunger then too.
This means that ADA and the Austrian federal government are committed to ensuring that Austria provides aid worldwide, not only together with Austrian organizations, but also on the multilateral side, with humanitarian aid and so-called development projects. And in this regard, ADA also has several priority countries. Because you mentioned it before, it is never enough, but of course ADA tries to concentrate its commitment a bit. Can you tell us a little bit about the priority countries?
With pleasure. The Austrian government has decided to concentrate on a few countries where we give concrete development aid and also implement projects. We have 11 priority countries. We have 4 in Africa: Ethiopia, Burkina Faso, Mozambique and Uganda. Then we have a cooperation office in Bhutan, which will be closed in 2023, because Bhutan will have reached the status of a middle-income country. We have implemented very good projects there. We've been working there since the 1960s. It's been a priority country since 1989, and I think we really have a lot to show there. Austria has built the first hydropower plants. In the field of education, it's done great training, but also now in the field of justice, we have cooperation between the two law faculties. And now the ministries of the interior are also working together very well. For example, on DNA analysis, fingerprints, etc.
So it's really a transfer of knowledge?
It really is a transfer of knowledge that is taking place, and which I think is also very much appreciated by Bhutan. Then we have Palestine as a priority country, where we've done water projects in Gaza, good governance and consultancy, and repeatedly given aid to the Palestinian refugees, some of whom are in camps. Then in Europe, we have Georgia, Armenia, Moldova, and in the Western Balkans, Kosovo and Albania as priority countries.
And the famous, much-cited local aid can be seen particularly well in the Middle East, because most refugees do not immediately go to another continent, but remain in their region. On average, the United Nations say that it takes 6 to 7 years before people decide to migrate internationally, because they simply do not see any possibility to go home. I think this is very important to say here. I do not know about you, but I have visited many refugee camps and met many people fleeing, and not a single one of them said to me, "I'm doing this voluntarily," or "I want to do this." It is really the last resort out of total desperation to go somewhere and start over.
Yes, there have been many refugee camps since 1948, first in Jordan, later in Lebanon, and today due to Syrian refugees, especially in Lebanon and Jordan. And we have given humanitarian aid to the refugees there. and have done so also through the UN organisation UNRWA. Austria's been giving money to UNRWA for 30 to 40 years to provide for the refugees in these camps.
This is absolutely vital aid, and I think the United States cut back their aid at short notice, and it was a real drama, especially for hospitals and schools in the Gaza Strip. So there are unimaginable fates connected with this. And I think I can also reveal at this point that we have walked this earth for some time. And if you imagine that you go to a refugee camp in Jordan and there are people our age who have guest status, because in Jordan, for example, you are not a refugee. They are guests in a country that is not theirs for 50 to 60 years. It is important to keep all this in mind when discussing a sometimes heated topic before offhandedly saying, well, we have to prevent all this. Real dramas are taking place, and I'm very proud that Austria has increased its resources. Now, if the narrative softens a little bit too, then we will again stand for what we are actually known for in the European Union, namely as a guardian of human rights and for human interaction. This is also very important to mention for me at this point. So the priority countries have a special relationship with Austria. Is that how you would put it?
Yes, they have a special relationship. Especially if you have an office there, you build up contacts. And the various heads of the coordination offices have very good relations with the local governments. Today it's called development cooperation, which means that the projects we do there are coordinated with the local governments. We do what the governments want us to do. We listen carefully to what they want to do and also evaluate together with the host countries. Unfortunately, especially in Africa, we're confronted with crises in all priority countries, perhaps least of all in Uganda, but since yesterday there are rumours of a coup in Burkina Faso. We don't know exactly what happened yet, but in any case, shots have been fired in barracks. Our head of the coordination office there also heard them. And of course there is some concern in the north of the country, where IS-allied terrorists have carried out terrorist attacks. In Ethiopia, which has long been a priority country for Austria, a civil war is ongoing, especially around the province of Tigray, which has seen an uprising. The situation has now eased somewhat. In December, the Tigray troops advanced on the capital Addis Ababa, but it looks like this has stopped now. Of course, this has also affected our projects, and the projects that CARE is implementing there. CARE has been doing very important and good projects in Ethiopia for many years. These projects had to be postponed, which is of course very regrettable, especially when food supplies are not being delivered and cannot reach those who need them very urgently. Mozambique has also been hit by terrorist attacks in the north. Then there was a typhoon that cost many people their livelihoods, so the conditions are very, very difficult. And there were terrorist attacks also in Kampala in Uganda 2 or 3 months ago, very close to our coordination office. So this is definitely a worrying situation. And we hope that the situation there will not get out of control, so that we can continue to implement our projects as planned.
We hope so too, and we are working on it as much as we can. In the past, when we were confronted with a disaster, we did a big disaster intervention and then we may have left again. Today, however, and you described this impressively just now, we have refugee flows, we have the effects of climate change that you can also see here in Europe, because what we saw in Germany last year is not regular and normal either. Moreover, we have armed conflicts, we have famines, and we are struggling with a worldwide increase in food prices, which even in our country, while not yet threatening the existence of large parts of the population, are certainly already very noticeable for those who are not so well off. We also talk about the cost of heating, and we see in this overlapping of complex circumstances that it is becoming more and more challenging, not only for us as an organization, but also for you as a large government donor. Do you see a solution in the so-called Nexus projects? because there are dual and triple, and now we will soon have the quadruple nexus, because everything is coming together. Is that the adequate way to deal with this, or how would you assess this?
We believe, and international advisors also say this, that when you see the nexus, you don't just focus on one issue, but see development, peace, hunger, poverty, water, that everything actually plays together. And in fact, it does. You cannot pick out one single criterion for the big problems, but everything plays together. When there's hunger, people flee and leave their home region, with the climate equally so. The climate probably influences hunger through droughts or floods. This leads to a rural exodus. There are not enough jobs, and often governments then come under pressure because discontent with the government grows. And so one thing leads to another, and that's why these are very complex issues.
And what we understand as development in our field is in any case something holistic, as you say, that is totally interrelated. You cannot just dedicate yourself to a particular problem and then think you have solved something in a sustainable way. How far is the influence of a country like Austria and ADA when we take Ethiopia, for example? Personally, it makes me sad when I see that many things had developed well in the country and now everything starts all over again, and especially how the people, the civilian population, is suffering again, just as we saw 20 years ago. This, of course, does not mean that it was pointless to help there. On the contrary, the civilian population needs our help now more urgently than ever, especially since in general a better level of education in Ethiopia had already been achieved. How influential is Europe? I do not want to break it down to Austria, but what can the European Union really do apart from saying nice things?
Of course, the EU is trying to influence the president and also the rebels in Tigray to start a dialogue. To some extent, both sides have refused to engage in dialogue, and as you said, it makes one very sad. The president has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. There was really a great hope, and above all joy, that he solved the conflict with Eritrea, that the borders were opened, that flights could take place again. Everybody was relieved, and it all looked very good. And as you said, Ethiopia was on a very good path. And nobody would have believed 2 years ago that a civil war would break out. I think there are now signs that a dialogue is being started. These are signs, so we all hope. The European Union is trying to push both sides towards dialogue through mediation. In particular, it's also trying to push the government so that the borders can open and food and humanitarian aid can reach Tigray again. The UN is exerting pressure. The UN Secretary General has officially appealed to the president and the government in Ethiopia. But America is also very active and trying to mediate. So we all hope that a dialogue will be started and that the conflict can be resolved. I've heard that a Nobel Peace Prize winner has a special obligation to work in this direction.
Or there should be. To what extent would you say, because of course with issues that are regulated between states, you have to be careful that you do not punish civil society even more than it is already being punished in these big conflicts? I mean, it is not just Ethiopia. You mentioned a few other African countries. Let us look at the Middle East. In Syria, humanitarian corridors are needed again and again, and it is becoming more difficult to do humanitarian work. What is your view on this? I mean, when I started out as a humanitarian worker, you were relatively protected in conflict zones. You were not the first target for kidnappings like in the Sahel zone, for example. It was always dangerous, but there was a certain level of protection. I would not say that there is none today, but never before have so many humanitarian workers lost their lives as in recent years. And they have also been the subject of kidnappings as a means of exerting pressure and making things possible. What is actually changing there? Why is it worth less today? And why do all states around the world adhere less to the rules of the games, even officially?
I think this development is very worrying, as you said. In the past, people respected humanitarian aid. We see it in the Middle East in particular, but also in Africa, that terrorist groups that feel committed to ISIS don't care at all about international rules and humanitarian protection. That's very, very worrying. When you see that entire school classes are being taken hostage, abducted, that someone can be so inhumane is incomprehensible. I don't think any faith or religion would justify such a thing. You can also see how people only refer to religions, but act against all ethical principles. As you say, they're criminals. So that's quite worrying. And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more NGOs being expelled. But not only NGOs, but also UN organizations that are working in these countries. When representatives speak out and call a spade, they're often expelled from a country. These are worrying developments.
To be honest, it worries me a lot that we also see this to some extent at our EU borders. That is not so easy when a difficult situation arises. And even within the European Union, where before 2015 it would probably have been a quick thing to provide humanitarian aid, this is now being called into question. This is why I said earlier that something is spreading globally that I cannot fully grasp, and where I think to myself, also in my function at CARE, what can we do, we as CARE and all stakeholders and all partners, to counteract this? Because it is not normal when a few thousand people are sitting at the Polish-EU border and the children get bronchitis and die because they do not even get an antibiotic or a doctor. And similar scenes are taking place in Bosnia. CARE Austria is also financing a COVID program for the refugees there, right at the border, using private donations. And within the Austrian society, it is not such a big issue, except that many, not all, please, but many are terrified that more will come to us, and so they just try not to think about it. From a human rights point of view, this is not a good solution for us Europeans, is it?
You mentioned it earlier. It is, of course, very reprehensible. If one attracts people for political reasons with false promises, as happened with a European country, and then takes them hostage, so to speak, it's also unthinkable that one works with such methods, and very reprehensible.
A brutalization?
Yes, a brutalization. A brutalization of politics as well.
Are we doing enough to counter this?
I think NGOs are very active. But of course we're all called upon, on the one hand, not to fall into a trap and not to lose our humanity. This is a difficult situation for everyone, but it's also difficult for politicians.
Yes, and especially now that it is so difficult for all of us in the pandemic, it could also have the effect, and it has the effect on many people, that one can also better imagine what it is like when others are in a bad situation. Let us briefly turn to another topic that has been discussed since my student days, and I'm sure you know this discussion too. To what extent is development cooperation an instrument of foreign policy? Is it understood this way? Or how is it perceived today? Alternatively, is it purely a humanitarian component that is not closely tied to foreign policy agendas?
Well, in most countries of the world that give development aid or practice development cooperation, development cooperation is part of the foreign ministry. So we in Austria also see it as part of our foreign policy. There are some countries where this is not the case. They have their own ministries. However, in most of these cases, development cooperation had previously been part of foreign policy, and some have brought it back to the foreign ministry later. Then there are countries that have agencies like us. And in some countries, these have also moved back into the foreign ministry. So each country is free to handle it as it wants. But we in Austria see it as part of our foreign policy.
Also part of the foreign policy agenda?
Also part of the foreign policy agenda. Specifically, of course, in Austria, we're a federal agency subordinate to the foreign ministry. I'm appointed by the foreign ministry. And the budget of ADA also comes from the foreign ministry.
And when organizations like CARE apply for a project and win it, then this is supplemented. I explain this because not everyone knows this either, by private funds. That means that every initiative, or almost every initiative that we initiate, is a very Austrian one. Because on the one hand, the funding comes from institutional donors such as you and the Foreign Ministry or the Relief Fund for Disasters Abroad. And on the other hand, it comes from the incredibly important private donors who support organizations like CARE. For us, the European Union is incredibly important, not only as a donor, but also to implement large projects. And very often we work in triumvirate with ADA, who also very often co-finances our EU projects. In these cases, we really have great leverage, especially in the economic sector, if we think of the Caucasus or in Bangladesh, for example. These are all projects that have a certain developmental focus, of course, as we have our focus on girls and women, yes, but they are all there to push economic projects, to create income, to create education, and that the countries benefit directly from it, and above all, the local populations. You said it very well before. We listen and we do something together. Today, it is no longer the case, as one would perhaps imagine as an outsider that an organization could simply go to another country and start doing its things there.
Colonialism is over. It's a partnership approach.
Exactly. It is a partnership approach. We have to establish the much-cited eye level from our side and pay attention to it. Because otherwise, it is actually difficult for us to win people for cooperation. Is my assessment correct? Would you say the same?
Yes, I would also like to thank all the Austrian NGOs with whom we have excellent cooperation, especially CARE. We have excellent cooperation in many countries. And without our cooperation with you and many other Austrian NGOs, our development cooperation could not be implemented so well. You have many staff members abroad as well. You also have local staff on the ground who know the situation very well and have a lot of experience in this field. And we're very satisfied with this cooperation. We also have a regular exchange. And as I said, I would like to thank you and your staff for this good cooperation.
I'm happy to reciprocate your thanks. In the meantime, this has also changed a lot in the last 10 years. We practically only have local staff. And if there are so-called expats or expatriates, I say this for our listeners, then they are from the region. So in Chad, for example, there is someone from Mali or Nigeria, but it is hardly ever the case that a European or an American works in a CARE project abroad for a long time.
And you mentioned the European Union earlier. Austria also receives money from the European Commission for the implementation of development projects, in which we also cooperate with Austrian NGOs. We not only receive money from the European Commission for the implementation of specific projects, but also from other EU countries. We also have cooperation with other EU countries. You look at where someone is present, where someone is particularly good, and then you ask and say, could you please also implement money from us? We would like to support this project. This is increasing. We now have a cooperation with the Czech Republic. Something is in the pipeline with Slovakia. We've repeatedly received money from Liechtenstein for our projects, and we've also received money from Sweden and Denmark. So we have excellent cooperation with other EU countries, where we receive money or whose projects we support. And of course, Austria also pays money into the development cooperation funds of the European Union.
The magic word of the future or the present is, of course, cooperation. I can only repeat this for CARE. We also work well together with other large international NGOs. But the individual CARE organizations in Europe also coordinate regularly. And I'm proud, and I think I'm allowed to be, that CARE Austria is by far the largest partner of the European Union in Austria. I like to remember a conversation last year with our esteemed foreign minister, who was very surprised to hear that. We really are by far the largest partner of the EU as CARE Austria. In this respect, it is also a little bit about keeping the Austrian position and the Austrian flag high, if you will, in the global context. That is also what our work is about a little bit, right?
Absolutely. Of course, as the saying goes, do good and talk about it. That's also important. If you do good, then you should also be able to show it. and I think that it's also in the interests of the countries that receive aid.
They are also proud.
Indeed, they are very proud. Indeed, they're also proud.
They are also proud of the people who support them and are happy to show it. Now we come to the group that we have spoken about the least so far. That is the Austrians. In your opinion, I know you have only recently started your new position here in Austria. Do you think that this is a topic that is pretty much in the center of our society, or is it more a distant memory?
I think more could be done, and we must do more. In December, we launched an SDG initiative to better explain the Sustainable Development Goals to the people. We want to start with the students, with the youth. So you're quite right, more needs to happen. I believe that many people do not know, and how should they know, what Austrian development cooperation is, what it does, what it achieves, what the Austrian NGOs achieve in development cooperation. I think we need to coordinate even more closely in order to get this across to the people, and also to young people in particular, so that they can see what good can be achieved with our projects. I think young people are open to solidarity in action. I think there's a lot of understanding. And if we can communicate that even better, that would be very important. And it's very important to me, in terms of public relations, that we go out and do even more to inform people, to tell them what's being done. And I believe that this will lead to more understanding, and ultimately more willingness to contribute.
And we could also be proud of what we do, also abroad. We like to call ourselves the world champions in donations, and I see a great willingness to help CARES projects among the Austrian civilian population. Yet, there is still a certain gap between us as a collective priding ourselves in what we do here and what we do globally. And it is also our duty to do something globally, because we are not alone in the world, are we?
No, we're not. And I think that when Austrians see that there is misery and disaster, people are very willing to donate. When they get pictures delivered to their homes, which is always the case with major crises and catastrophes, people show solidarity and show that they're also willing to donate money for a good cause and for immediate help.
I would say it is almost a natural reflex that when you see someone starving or everything really going down, you say, what can I do? And helping has also become more professional in recent years, because I am often asked, but I'm helping my neighbor. And I respond, yes, that's very good too. People should generally treat each other with respect. But when it comes to making a contribution to Afghanistan, it is good to do it with a professional partner, because it's not easy to do it alone. Now, women and girls are a focus at CARE. I often say that, of course, we also help men and boys. That is out of the question. However, if you do not take women and girls as a so-called target group, then they are often overlooked or not given enough consideration. This is what CARE is all about. And this is also a big issue for ADA and very important. Why is it so important for you?
For us at ADA, the promotion of women and gender equality is very important. As we can see, women and girls are very often neglected. Even now with the pandemic, we see that most of the burden rests on women. On the one hand, women are often responsible for procuring food, for cooking, for providing for the family. Then there's a pandemic, and woman is primarily called upon to take care of the sick children, the parents. They're also the first to be laid off during an economic crisis, because they're often already in precarious jobs beforehand. So we have to take countermeasures and support and protect women in particular. In the past, this was often neglected. That's why ADA and the Foreign Ministry have made it a priority to look at how women and girls can be promoted in every project.
Exactly, and that also applies to emergency aid projects. There are very simple examples. Everything you hand out, people have to be able to move and carry away. And they have to be able to get home again safely so that it actually benefits them. So this is not something that is sometimes laughed at. but something that is incredibly important for economic and human rights reasons, and also for development policy considerations. And this is not only true for the rest of the world, but also for Austria, it is fair to say.
Yes, in Europe too. Women were politically disadvantaged for a long time. And there they are still being disadvantaged economically, socially and politically.
Or do not go to school because they are a girl. I'm thinking of Afghanistan, for example. There they can still go to school, but their big brother has to go with them, which does not hurt him, of course. But whether it makes sense for them to be in the same class is debatable. We are slowly coming to the end of our conversation. Due to the pandemic, we all do not really know what is going to happen next week. I mean, we have never been in this situation before. I planned something for Thursday, nothing personal, but with care, and I hope I can make it happen and that everyone can still attend. Finally, something perhaps a bit more personal. What makes you happy and what worries you when you look ahead to the next year?
I'm generally a calm person, so I let things come at me. Of course you can plan, but you can't plan everything. Perhaps that has to do with my profession. As you said, I was in Iran, Saudi Arabia and China, and an embassy is a microcosm of problems, so you never know what new challenge you're going to face when you come into the office in the morning. Of course, there's a reporting activity, a normal routine, but there are always new things coming up. People are in prison, people are arrested for drug possession, people are sentenced to long prison terms for high treason. So there are always situations that you cannot plan for. And so every day is very different from the other. And you just have to face the concrete challenges. You can't plan a lot of things. You can't foresee them. And I think if you go into it with a certain calmness and not with too much fear, then you can also solve things more calmly and more thoughtfully. And I think that that's also the case with ADA. We're well positioned. We have the full support of the Foreign Ministry, and we work very well with NGOs in Austria. I think we'll be able to cope with the crises that arise in the future, and we hope that we will soon be able to put the pandemic behind us. Climate change will certainly occupy us even more in the coming years. And as you mentioned, you can see that not only in Africa, but you can also see it here in Austria. I mean, last autumn, a forest area burnt down. This would have been unimaginable years ago that a forest fire would rage in November or December, when it's supposed to be humid. Or even in the Waldviertel in Lower Austria, where I was born, it's getting drier and drier, and you can see how the groundwater is sinking and forests are dying. So these are new challenges that we have to face, and we hope that we will succeed in counteracting them. So these are new challenges that we have to face, and we hope that we will succeed in counteracting them.
I would like to summarize what you have just described with the development concept of resilience, which we always wonderfully recommend to everyone else in our projects, and we are now challenged to practice ourselves as well. That means practicing resilience, calmness, and also relying on good partnerships. Dr. Stift, thank you very much on behalf of Care Austria for taking the time to talk to us. We wish you all the best, and I personally am really looking forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your kind invitation. And I'm also looking forward to continuing our very good cooperation. Thank you.
This podcast was dubbed by Patrick Lamb.